and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Much of today's show is pre-recorded as we continue to protect ourselves and our guests from the spread of COVID-19. I'm Genevieve Randall. Events all over the state highlighted this week. We'll talk about some concerts in a park in Minden, dancing on the prairie in Red Cloud, plus we'll hear poetry from Nebraska poets today. A new documentary, which will premiere on NET World Saturday, September 5th, and on NET's main television channel, September 20th, will include an appearance from a bass player who grew up in Nebraska. The documentary puts both music and mental illness in the spotlight. It's titled Orchestrating Change, and bassist Eric Higgins joins me to talk about it. Eric, welcome back to Friday Live.
Thanks, Genevieve.
Let's talk about this documentary. It's about an orchestra called the Me Too Orchestra, which I'll just mention at the start here, had that name long before the whole, I'm making air quotes, Me Too movement. It's an orchestra that is providing a judgment-free zone for musicians with mental illness and addiction, although a musician doesn't have to have a diagnosis to join this orchestra. So I'm curious, how did you hear about the Me Too Orchestra?
I stumbled upon it completely accidentally. It was in 2014. I had just moved back to Boston from Germany, and I got called in last minute for a gig in Vermont, which happened to be the Me Too Orchestra at a time when they still had projects that involved freelancers. Those freelancers would go and they would play in mental health facilities. And it was a chance for Ronald to conduct a group that was maybe a little higher level. They've since stopped doing that. So I had no idea what it was. And I walked into this first rehearsal, not expecting anything, and just remember being totally blown away by Ronald Brownstein. I just remember thinking, this guy is the real deal. And a kind of level that I hadn't seen in a long time, even after 4 years of playing in a big opera house in Germany. That's how I found out. But it was fairly close to the beginning of the Me Too orchestra journey, and they hadn't yet started the ensemble in Boston. I plucked up the courage and asked Ronald if he would be a mentor of sorts, because I felt like I had a lot I could learn from him. He became my musical mentor, you could say, and they started coming to Boston more and more. The orchestra started in Burlington, Vermont, but it was about the time that they were going to start a new chapter in Boston. So our relationship started kind of at the same time and around the founding of the Me Too Boston Orchestra.
You mentioned the conductor of the Me Too Orchestra, Ronald Brownstein, whose own personal story is in the documentary. It's kind of an amazing journey for him. And if I remember correctly, he was here with you in Nebraska as you had a sort of discussion based around this documentary. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and what came out of that discussion and event?
The Lincoln Crossroads Music Festival was fortunate enough to be the first kind of preview viewing of the documentary already last August. And Ronald Brownstein and his wife, Caroline Whitten, who are the two founders of the Me Too Orchestra, came out to Lincoln to have a discussion after the film. And we had a beautiful dialogue with the 80 or so people who came to see it about how, I remember thinking how much the audience, so many members of the audience reacted with something along the lines of, you know, if my brother had only had this, or if, you know, if my mother had only had something like this, you know, their lives would have been so much different. And I think that's one of the main reasons why they're called Me Too, was Ronald, when he finally started being open about his diagnosis, so many people either had a diagnosis or had a family member that had a diagnosis. That was just so overwhelming. And we could see that in the discussion we had at the workshop last summer.
There are other ensembles and kind of branches of Me Too being founded in other states. I wonder if you can speak to how far-reaching this is to have orchestras like this.
Yeah, I mean, the Me Too organization is founded or is organized in a way that there can be affiliates in different states. at the moment, there's a Me Too Burlington, there's a Me Too Boston, there's one in New Hampshire, there's a small one in Portland, Oregon, and there are ones being started in, I think, in Florida and in Pittsburgh, possibly. I am trying to get the finishing touches on the getting a Me Too orchestra started here in Aarhus, Denmark, where I live. I think one of the beautiful things is it's something that is needed everywhere, you know, to have a stigma-free zone for people and an opportunity to find a new identity through an ensemble like this is so important. The one disadvantage is Ronald is so unique and so special that he's hard to imitate other places. But that's one small thing. But he is a spectacular musician, first of all, and also such a warm-hearted person. I don't think the organization could have really gotten so much traction if it hadn't been for him and Caroline and their story.
Do you find living in Denmark that thinking about preconceived notions of mental illness and some of those stigmas that exist, are there differences in other countries?
Yeah, there are differences, but the similarities are probably most striking, actually. I was just listening onto the radio the other day where a commentator said that mental illness is the last big taboo, even in Denmark, where there's maybe more funding for healthcare and services like that, but it's still a taboo, and I think it's still stigmatized all over the world. So I think the mission is particularly relevant and immediate, really everywhere.
As a musician yourself, one thing that struck me is that, let's say someone is having an episode or a bad day, they're not expected to come up to every rehearsal. They're not expected to be perfectly on time all the time. They can miss a performance. That seems so unusual in the world of classical music, especially.
Yeah, and it's one reason why I think the people for whom Me Too Orchestra is really important. It is such a huge part of their lives because it's more about the community than anything. That being said, it's about the music making, but the music making is there to enable a community. And classical music, I think, suffers too much from kind of stiff expectations. And what I find about having played in the Me Too Orchestra is it's simply about the joy of making music. It's not really about anything else. There's no intention for it to be perfect, but it is to create joy together, which I think you can hear in the when you hear the orchestra perform in the documentary.
The documentary we're talking about is Orchestrating Change. Bassist and Nebraska native Eric Higgins appears in the film two or three times, which makes its premiere on NET Television, first on NET World at 11 p.m. on September 5th, and then again on NET on Sunday, September 20th at 1 p.m. And Eric himself has considered founding one of these Me Too orchestras in Denmark. Eric, it's nice to have the opportunity to chat with you about the film.
Yes, it's so great to have a chance to talk about it and spread the message to a wider audience.
Eric Higgins is a bass player who appears in a new documentary called Orchestrating Change. You're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. put many artists and music lovers in a bit of a tough spot, forcing postponements or cancellations, the Tallgrass Prairie Fiddle Festival at Homestead National Monument in Beatrice has to add its name to the list. But all is not lost, however. Joining us to talk about online events happening in place of the usual festival is Amber Kirkendall from the park. Amber, it's nice to see you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you in the studio. Tell us about the decisions leading up to change the Fiddle Festival this year in favor of online activities.
Absolutely. So we've been trying to navigate the health situation. And so initially and yearly, on an annual basis, we hold this event on the Saturday before Memorial Day. We did make the decision back last spring to push it to Labor Day weekend, but ultimately decided for the health of everybody involved that doing it on site would not be possible. So we did create the alternative activities that we're going to have this coming Saturday, tomorrow, September 5th. As part of our annual Fiddle Festival, we usually have a 10 a.m. workshop with Debbie Greenblatt, and that's in person, and anybody can come to that. So this year, we're still having a 10 a.m. workshop with Debbie Greenblatt, but it's going to be via Zoom instead of in person. Uh-huh. So if someone's interested in that, that specific part of the event you have to register for, it's home_information@nps.gov to register for that. And so she'll do a 1-hour session, and she'll be covering songs that were brought to the United States via the Homestead Act. So from different cultures that came to the United States through the Homestead Act. It will be by sight, but they can get the sheet music from Debbie afterwards.
Ah, interesting.
So that will be the first portion. And then usually every year, the Fiddle Festival hosts a competition with lots of different categories, $3,000 worth of prizes. We are not able to do that this year. But the gentlemen who usually participate as our judges, they will be performing fiddle music. And in between that, and this will be live on our Facebook page. So at 1 p.m. on Homestead's Facebook page, we'll have a live stream of them performing. And then throughout the whole performance, in between different songs, we'll be taking questions. So you can ask a question about what it's like to do fiddle music. What's the difference from a classical violin? But also, what are they looking for when they're judging to kind of get a head start on, hopefully, the competition that will take place next year? And I will read those questions and ask them in live time. We'll also have audio description and live captioning, so it's accessible for all.
This is probably the first time this has happened in the history of the Fiddle Festival at Homestead.
It is the first time that it's happened.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Well, it's nice, though, to have that interactive element, I suppose. And I wonder if you could talk about why the fiddle is so important to Nebraska's history.
Absolutely. So the Homestead Act of 1862 gave an opportunity to earn 160 acres of land. And so people came from all over the country, but also all over the world. And the specific way of playing the fiddle and the, you know, this Western style of music is something that was really cultivated within this culture. And it's something, you know, if you read some of those memoirs of the, you know, homesteader authors, they talk about the importance of the fiddle and the way people gathered around it. So we definitely remember it through this tradition.
Now, you have your national park uniform on here today, Amber. And it makes me think you've got guidelines coming at you from the state, from, I'm assuming, on a national level as well. Did this whole pandemic thing make planning this event harder or easier? Or how
did
that go?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's more of a last-minute situation because it was harder in the sense of how can we navigate this? We really wanted, it's such an amazing sense of community that you get from this event, and we felt like that live aspect needed to be there. But definitely navigating how can we make this happen safely, and then, you know, can we proceed? Can we be for sure that we have all our I's dotted and our T's crossed? So certainly that has been difficult, but like you said, there's federal level, there's state level, there's local level, but fortunately our grounds have been able to remain open this entire time. While that we do have our social distance guidance, our buildings have been open since June. And so we are accessible to the public, but certainly those big events that we love to host and that we host regularly look much different. different.
I understand. Well, we will have a link on the Friday Live page of our website to make sure that people can find more information about the events going on tomorrow. So starting off at 10 a.m. with that workshop with Debbie Greenblatt,
yes.
Followed by some events there on Facebook with those who would have normally been judges, but
yep.
who are actually
1 p.m.
performing themselves
yes.
this year at 1 p.m. And that is all tomorrow. Again, we'll link to that on the Friday Live page. That web address is netnebraska.org. I've been talking with Amber Kirkendall about the Tallgrass Prairie Fiddle Festival in its unique form this year, probably one time only, we hope.
The hope is to go back to normal next year.
Yes, let's hope that that's the case. Amber, thanks so much. It sounds like it'll be a fun day.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Nebraska poet J.V. Brummels is director of WSC Press at Wayne State College and Ranches in northeastern Nebraska. Here he is reading two of his poems for us.
This poem is from the point of view of a cattle rancher in tall corn country. It's for Ezekiel, and it's called When All Blood is Shadow. Winter nights of clear weather, I drive state highways late after traffic's gone. White moon, gray earth, black shadow. Funny sort of thing to think on a hot, dry summer afternoon of elemental colors, high blue sky, green grass, red blood across the back of my hand from the red brand wire of the new fence we're stringing. Four glinting strands, black creosote, post of green steel. Not the blood of murdered bison nor the people who made them meat for winter, no matter how sweet and cheap that lie would be. Just aspirin-thin blood from a shallow cut of a red-painted barb across the parchment skin of an old white man. I bleed for me. My cows graze where bison roam. I fence out neighbors' corn and neighbors' machines and poisons, all there ready for the Roundup soybeans. Just another customer for salvation, I fence for my personal Jesus, runty neighbor, one-eyed Merle Jacobson who didn't survive eighth grade. Who better? What better? Late night blizzard, wind in the wire. Among cedars, cows big as buffalo, nostrils fringed with frost, hearts pumping hot. And here's a poem that I wrote shortly after quitting teaching, after nearly 40 years at Wayne State. It plays with time a little bit, fades back and forth in time. It's called Derby Day. I'm a black cat in a back alley behind a bar the afternoon before branding, racing home for an hour of fast-forwarded build-up to the greatest 2 minutes in sport. I'm a cowboy moseying off the curb, watching cops at the cable company down the block when some long shot corners a Pontiac Sunburn. To think I might have died. To think graduation's come and gone, my latest and last students scattered like shot. A year from now, no grades to award, we'll brand in the first good weather, get a leg up on summer, and have nothing at all left to fret about. I'm a white beard. I'm two weak eyes. I'm a whiskerless schoolmarm trying to be a 30-foot hard twist snake of an arena rope tied hard and fast to the horn. When luck double hawks a dogie out of dust and air, horse and calf and vaquero nodded, and no turning back from my father's hands that'll lace tomorrow's longer, softer line across corral dirt, stack dallies around the horn, give and take all the way to the branding fire. Sure, I miss a turn and lose a calf again and now, but I've studied the lesson dark horses teach. and education's learning how much to let slip and when to let go.
Nebraska poet J.V. Brummels, he read his poem Derby Day. Before that, he read another one of his poems called When All Blood is Shadow. Stay with Friday Live in about 6 minutes. We'll find out how Minden Opera House is still curating art and music in the community and having a little fun online. I'm Genevieve Randall. You're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio. The Ross Media Arts Center in Lincoln has new films opening. Meet the lawyers working in one of the most well-known civil liberties organizations, the ACLU. Waketal Dreyer has this review of The Fight.
We defend civil liberties for all. The promise of a right is that anyone can exercise the right.
There has been always a kind of comfort in knowing that the American Civil Liberties Union has your back. It's as if the union, affectionately called the ACLU, acts as a bodyguard, a protector from the bullies who show up out of nowhere to take your lunch money. The Fight, directed by Elise Steinberg, Eli B. Desprez, and Josh Kriegman, is a most informative documentary on the ACLU and the lawyers who fight for abortion rights, immigrant rights, LGBTQA rights, the census, and voting rights. The heroes and heroines are the five lawyers featured here: Bridget Amiri, Dale Ho, Lee Gillert, Joshua Block, and Chase Strangio. Each one puts on the requisite armor to go up against entities that compromise the civil liberties of Americans. To witness their devotion to the protection of civil liberties in spite of their frustrations and the pull on their emotions is a genuine source of pleasure. On its website, it states the ACLU has filed to date 237 lawsuits challenging the Trump administration. The Fight focuses on the following: reproductive rights, immigration and family separation, the Muslim ban, census, same-sex marriage. These are some heavy issues, but the directors bring levity to the story. We are treated to a conversation between attorneys Joshua Block and Chase Strangio, activists for LGBTQA rights.
I actually started cross-stitching.
Home
sweet home on a pillow.
Right. Like it's CrossFit, is what people are saying. Did you get, confused?
Bridget Amiri happily orders train wine after a successful argument on appeal before a three-judge panel in the Washington, D.C. court. She also loves Tom Petty's song, I Won't Back Down. We watch Dale Ho in front of a mirror rehearsing for his impending argument before the Supreme Court.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, the secretary's decision rested on a single assertion that...
Don't do this tomorrow.
Each of these scenes humanizes the men and women, or the Davids who confront the Goliaths with only a slingshot. What Steinberg, Desprez, and Kriegman bring to the table as well is that protecting civil liberties is no respecter of persons or groups. A controversial case defended the right of protest by white supremacists in Charlottesville in 2017, the same protest where Heather Heyer lost her life. Archival footage of the white supremacists carrying tiki torches chanting, Jews will not replace us. And David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, declaring,
we are determined to take our country back. We're going to fulfill the promises of Donald Trump.
Part of the documentary as well makes known criticism received by the defense teams from the American public.
To the ACLU, it is the bashing of the heads of the innocent and spilling of their brains on the sidewalk. Your hanging out with a lesbian crowd has obliterated all shards of decency in your own life.
Go home, immigrant pig.
After all is defended and done, The Fight suggests no matter how dark it gets, no matter the appearance of hopelessness, the deflation of joy, no matter, The ACLU, our bodyguards, stand ready to step up to the plate and defend us. You can count on that. The fight plays through September 17th at the Ross Media Arts Center in Lincoln. Also opening at the Ross is Baby Teeth, Shannon Murphy's film about a seriously ill teenager who falls in love with a drug dealer. For Friday Live, I am Joaquitl Dreher.
Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website. There are online-only or other socially distant events showing up. Feel free to submit your own arts or humanities event as well. The address to find events or to add your own is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here are some highlights. In Lincoln, the Lux Center for the Arts has three new exhibitions on display for First Friday. They're open from noon to 8 p.m. today. The work will be up for two of those exhibitions through the end of the month. The Lead Center is part of a world premiere of Stono, a virtual performance and post-show talkback. That's coming up Wednesday, September 9th at 6:45 p.m. And Chadron State College musicians will be hosting a festival concert series in the Mari Sandoz Center. Pianist Brooks Hafey is featured Wednesday, September 9th at 7 p.m. The concert will be streamed online. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture on the web at humanitiesnebraska.org.
Support for programming also comes from the Sunday Farmers Market at College View, open Sundays 10 until 2. The market offers all local produce and farm products. Located at 48th and Prescott, guidelines for social distancing at the market can be found at sundayfarmersmarket.org. Support for programming on NET also comes from Constellation Studios, a mixed-use artist workspace for all types of printmaking and paper projects, featuring printing presses, bookmaking, type shop, and wet paper studio. For info, constellation-studios.net. Still to come this morning, the Willa Cather Center in Red Cloud is hosting the first live performance in their opera house since the start of the pandemic. An interview with the performing artist in about 13 minutes. On Friday Live, I talk with Marcy Brandt from Minden Opera House. Like many presenters, they've had to make some adjustments to their performing arts series. Marcy, it's great to talk with you. I think it's been a minute.
Oh my goodness. It is so good to talk to you too. It's so good to feel like maybe there's a little bit of normal coming back.
Well, you guys have been very inventive here at the Opera House, having several performances slated for September as part of your MOH On The Go event. So why don't you talk about that? What is Minden Opera House On The Go?
I've never thought of it this way, but a friend of mine started calling it MOH. M-O-H, Mo.
Mo on the go,
okay. Which always makes me kind of laugh. It was one of those things that with COVID and everything, the indoor events, you know, obviously we've been told are a little bit more high risk. And so we've been talking to the health department, and we have a beautiful park that has a bandstand that has recently been renovated here in town called Chautauqua Park. And it kind of just was like, well, we might as well utilize that space, be a little bit safer, have a little more distance, be able to be outdoors while the weather is nice. And so it just kind of all fell into place with the artists and everything like that. We're moving outside.
So September 5th, or tomorrow, you have Bill Fornes. Tell us about that musician.
Oh, Bill is fantastic. Bill's been here a few times with a couple of other performers, and this time he's just doing a solo act, but Bill does a fantastic show of Johnny Cash songs. And so he's kind of been touring around, got himself, you know, a traveling camper and some gear and everything. And so he's been doing kind of his own thing for a little while during all this coronavirus good times. And so he said, I'm going to be in your area. How about a little show? We were supposed to do a bigger show earlier in the summer, and that didn't quite pan out. We're going to do that later. But he was like, I'm going to be in the area. So I said, by all means, let's do something.
And then September 12th, you have Josh Hoyer, whose name is probably pretty familiar to anybody who's longtime listeners or fans of NET. He's been featured in a number of ways, both radio and television. And you guys have gotten creative with some other things. You've been doing this for a while, but September 9th, you're hosting an online trivia. I wonder if you could explain how you hold this trivia contest online, especially if people are online, they can just Google an answer to a question, right? How do you guys do this?
We're pretty loosey-goosey with it. It's more just for entertainment value. Our local library, before all this stuff kind of came down, they were doing a monthly pub trivia night at one of the local bar and grill restaurants. And so obviously that all kind of got shut down back in March and April and everything. And so with us not being able to have many events and with them not being able to do their thing, we all kind of combined forces. And so there are three of us, the librarian in town, Janine Hill, and then myself, and then a friend of mine who works at the schools, Jeffrey Horner. The three of us just kind of brainstormed it, got together, and decided to co-host it together. So we post questions and do it all live on our Facebook page, and we tell you not to Google, and we don't really keep track of the scores. We just kind of randomly draw prizes for people who comment and who participate. So it's just pure fun.
The Minden Opera House does have that art gallery there. You've been featuring work in the gallery by Amy and Jack Sandine, and I understand that on Labor Day, you have a new artist who's going to be loading in some work for the months of September and October.
Deb Goodenberger, and she does some fantastic oil paintings. A little bit abstract, and you know, it's so fun to see various artists as they rotate through that gallery to see everybody's different styles. And so we do a 2-month period of time, and so it really gives you a nice window of opportunity to stop by and see that. And so the gallery is open anytime our doors are open, basically. So we are open Tuesday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and you are welcome to just stop by and see it. We're going to do some sort of virtual online artist reception. With things being what they are, kind of thought that might work best at this point in time. But so we'll do some sort of video interview, something. You know, we're still working out some creative ideas for how to promote her work, but just beautiful, colorful work, and it's fantastic. So hopefully if you're in the area and want to stop by, we'd love to have you come in.
Keeping the Art and Music Going, artwork by Deb Goodenberger up through September and October at the Minden Opera House Gallery there. Also, a couple of performances coming up. September 5th features Mo on the Go with Bill Fornes, as well as September 12th, Josh Hoyer, both of those musicians on those dates performing in Chautauqua Park there in Minden. And then there's the online trivia happening on September 9th. Marcy Brandt is with the Minden Opera House. Thanks for continuing to get creative and finding ways to entertain in these strange times.
Oh, it's selfish. I just love doing it. And so it's partially just because I need art and music in my life. And so might as well share it with everyone else.
Marcy, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. If you enjoyed that interview or an earlier interview and wish you could hear it again, you can play today's show as many times as you like online or download it. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org. Aubin Music at First Plymouth has 50 years of archived performances, some of which will be shared in an upcoming concert online.
It's going to be featuring 12 selections from our 50 years of existence here at Aubin Music. And as recent as our 2020 American Spiritual Ensemble performance, we'll be featuring something from there. And as far back as 1990.
Listen to a conversation with Aubin Music Executive Director Trey Coley on this week's Friday Live Extra. Download wherever you get your podcasts or listen on our website at netnebraska.org/radio. Two state poets before Matt Mason. The state poet was William Clefcorn, longtime professor of English at Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln. Clefcorn recorded a poetry series for NET Radio called Poetry of the Plains until he died in 2011. From that series, here are two of his unpublished poems from 2010, read by him.
And I'm going to shift to another new poem. This is one that I wrote, about an event that happened, I don't know how many years ago, I'd say 8 or 10 years, something like that, when a friend of mine would go with me to Risky's on a Friday afternoon, and we would sit and talk poems and language and have a cold beer and a sandwich or something. And this is one of those events. The poem is called At Risky's. We sit in a booth, my colleague and I, sipping cold beer and wondering whether our waitress knows or cares about what one of us learned this morning about sparrowhawks. They can see 8 times more clearly than Homo sapiens. She is lean and young and moon-faced and clear-eyed, and her cancer, she told us, is in remission. Yes, thank you, and cheeseburgers to complement the beer. I tried not to stare at a growth of what reminded me of fur, young rabbit fur, that covered her head, and I was reminded that one of the families of marsh rabbits, Sylvelagus palustris hefneri, is named after Playboy's Hugh Hefner. And that isn't all. The Cory bustard is perhaps the largest bird ever to have been capable of flight, up to 40 pounds and 4 feet long. She delivers the cheeseburgers with a grin, wants to know if we'd like another beer. Sure, we'd say, when you have the time. We move from birds to an entry in my colleague's notebook. Loche, meaning of questionable taste or morality. From the French, its translation squint-eyed, from the Latin luscus, or blind in one eye. I had a friend in high school, I say, who was blind in one eye and couldn't see out of the other. Even now, I say, I can picture him clearly. She brings us the beers. We sip. We talk. It is August. The fans overhead go around and around. If I focus on a single blade, I can follow it for maybe a full revolution. The clock on the east wall, with its lighted Clydesdales prancing, tells us to drink Budweiser. In a few years, no smoking will be permitted at Risky's. No smoking in any public facility in the state anywhere. But at the moment, a haze hangs serous and indifferent in the air. The Budweiser is cold, delicious, immediate. If I were a sparrowhawk, I could see it 8 times more clearly. If I were a Cory bustard, I could, in spite of the odds against me, take wing. And when our waitress returns, I'll ask her to remove her apron and join us. I want to give her the keys to the kingdom. Oh, somebody, please attend me. I want to touch her hair.
That was the late Bill Clefcorn reading his unpublished poem, At Risky's. This is Friday Live on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. The Willa Cather Center in Red Cloud will host Garen Kunz for a performance a week from today. He recently won a Governor's Arts Award and is a professional dancer, singer, flute player, and storyteller whose specialty is in sharing the heritage and living traditions of Native American culture. And Rachel Olson is education coordinator for the Willa Cather Center. It's great to talk with you, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning, Garen.
Good morning, Genevieve. Thanks for having me.
Is Garen's appearance in Red Cloud the first performance the center has hosted since the start of the pandemic?
It is. We have not had a performance in our Opera House space since February 29th. So we're really happy to have Garen perform for us at the Opera House.
Garen, you also founded the Many Moccasins dance troupe. Now, how often do you or the troupe perform?
Last year and the previous years, we were going out probably about 2 to 3 times a month. And it usually picks up around Native American month in November. And we went from coast to coast and then a lot of places in Nebraska, as well as that kind of the tri-state area. But we've been having the Many Moccasins dance troupe since 2001. And it has taken us very far from Russia. We went to Germany. We've been to Denmark. And there's a lot of good places that we went from, of course, Canada. And we always try to make sure that any place that we go, we embrace their culture. And then we try to educate everybody that takes in our culture that we have to present. Unfortunately, due to the pandemic, all of our shows have stopped this year. And we're looking forward to this show down in Red Cloud.
For that performance in Red Cloud, what can people expect?
We always start with a story. We share our stories, we share our dances, and we share a lot of our music and our songs. And without the drum, we wouldn't be able to dance. And without the heartbeat of Mother Earth and the drum beat, a lot of things that we take for granted these days wouldn't be if it wasn't for the drum. And so that's one of the first instruments that we have. And so we pay tribute to that. And we try to present some of our culture. Give them a snapshot of some of the reasons behind the dances. So if attendees ever get to see a powwow or just kind of yearn for the music or want to learn more about the culture, they're more than welcome to come and see the show.
Garen, I wonder if we could dig into that a little bit. Part of what you specialize in is fancy feather dancing and prairie chicken dancing. And I'll just mention here that if anyone has ever gone to watch actual prairie chickens and then you watch some of the traditional dancing, you really can start to see a kind of connection in some of the movements that are made. I'm also wondering if there are other aspects of the dance or what you wear for the performance that have some special significance.
A lot of times we get the question of where you guys' costumes. And that's one of the one things that we try to educate people on is we don't call them costumes. What we wear, it's a part of us. A lot of things have been passed down to the generation. So we call them regalia. And everything that we wear has a significance or has been passed down or made with a lot of hours, tender. You can't pick one of these things up at like a supermarket or a store. They have to be handmade. Every time a bead goes on a regalia, a lot of times my mother makes them, and we pour our heart and soul into these regalia. They're a reflection of the designs that we wear on them. You can tell what tribe you come from. Maybe even the beadwork or the artwork that, or the regalia tells a story. We wear it with pride, and there's a lot of times that they take a couple years to make. The regalia that I got, my mother just made, and it took us about 2 years to complete, and I'm very proud of it. But, you know, we're always trying to encourage our young people to get into dancing and make regalia as well.
So sharing those cultural traditions through the performing arts, through music, dance, and storytelling, how did you come to share in those ways? Who shared with you or taught you?
My mother and my father. My father passed away on Father's Day last year, but he raised me in a good setting. We have our powwow celebration in Winnebago, and they've been having it for 154 years. And I remember having good times at the powwow and seeing the dances and the drums and even the food. It comes down to the food. And one of the one things that when I was growing up here in Winnebago, a lot of my classmates were of Native American heritage. And when I went to college over at Wayne State College, it was a big culture shift for me. And I was like kind of in a culture shock. A lot of people came to me and asked questions. And I found myself like answering those questions. Of course, I still don't know everything. And I'm always learning traditions and some of the customs that we have. What I relayed to them, they took a great interest into that. So that's how the Mini Moccasins came about. Our first show was at Wayne State College for the college students, and we just got encouraged to keep it going, and here we are. Some years later, still going.
Garen Kuntz is the featured performer. A week from today, September 11th, first at 10 a.m., and then later at 7:30 p.m. in Red Cloud. Garen, thank you. A pleasure talking with you.
Appreciate the opportunity, and we look forward to a great show. A lot of times we come, we ask that people open up their hearts, and they'll definitely leave with something. You know, in the Lakota culture, we don't have a word for goodbye. Because we'll see each other, whether it be in this world or the next.
Is there an expression you'd like to share that means that in Lakota?
My mom's a Lakota, and we're direct descendants of Crazy House and Red Cloud. My great-great-grandfather was Chief White Cow Killer. We always say Madaki Aase, which stands for we are all related. And truly, in 2020, a lot of things came together, and we are all related.
Rachel, there are two performances, I understand, one at 10 a.m. and another at 7:30 p.m. I'm wondering if you could talk about the difference between the two and what safety measures are in place for both of those in light of the whole pandemic.
Because of COVID restrictions, Garen was gracious enough to perform on the prairie for us in the morning on Friday. So that enables us to bring local students from Red Cloud Schools to see Garen perform on the prairie, and makes it easy to accommodate that crowd in terms of social distancing and being outside in the fresh air. So we're really grateful that he was able to make that arrangement for us. The 7:30 performance is the originally scheduled performance that Garen agreed to do when we scheduled our season, and that will take place on our Opera House stage, and we have unfortunately, we have eliminated concessions in our bar for the evening, and we are requiring masks be worn in the Opera House auditorium during the performance. And we have spread out our seating so people can practice social distancing. So we have a capacity in the theater of about 75 audience members.
Rachel Olson is education coordinator for the Willa Cather Center. Rachel, thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
And you can link to more information about these events or anything you hear about on the show here on Friday Live on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. Just ahead, we'll hear from Corbin Hirschhorn of KVNO about events in Omaha. Good routines are a comfort as we navigate our daily lives, but they can also become ruts that we might want to get out of. With this in mind, All About Books host Pat Leach reached for something different for her a mystery novel, Stranger Diaries by Ellie Griffith.
In all, The Stranger Diaries has much to offer someone who doesn't usually read mysteries. I'm forever suggesting that readers venture outside of their usual reading grooves, which, let's face it, sometimes become ruts. I'm tracking down a few other prize winners or nominees to help me expand my reading horizons. I invite you to do the same.
A full review with no spoiler alert needed for the Edgar Award-winning novel Stranger Diaries by Ellie Griffith, online now at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. A new exhibition opens tonight at the Pet Shop Gallery in the Benson area of Omaha. KVNO's Corbin Hirschhorn has more.
The Pet Shop Gallery in Benson will open Ange Bennett's Colored Black this Friday. The exhibition concerns black bodies following recent events such as the death of Elijah McClain.
When I thought about this show, so I had originally planned out last year, I believe, that I was going to do a show September 2020, Pet Shop. And the original idea was more, it had nothing to do with race. It had nothing to do with what it is now. And 2020 has been such a heavy year. And when the Elijah McClain death happened, or, well, it happened, what, maybe a year or two ago, but it came out again about details in how that young man died and his final words, and that kind of sparked something in me, and I was just like, scratch this show. I need to do something that speaks to who I am. It speaks to what's happening in this nation, and I just started producing. And so it's really just the Black body and how society views Black bodies, as far as, you know, no matter, it's that saying that you always have to be twice as good to get half of what's being offered. And kind of centering that is, you know, no matter how well you present yourself, there's always going to be this image of you as, because you are a Black body in this country.
Using 2D elements on plywood panels, digital imagery, and 3D mixed media assemblage with rope, muslin dolls, and acrylic paint, Colored Black takes the audience on a journey of fear, violence, and rage.
I'm kind of taking the viewer on this journey. I didn't want to go too far back, so it's pretty much, I remember, I think it was, is it Candace Owens? She had did this interview or segment one time, and she had mentioned that, you know, the laws that are created aren't targeting Black and brown people. Like, they're not written explicitly to target Black and brown people. And so it kind of brought me back to Jim Crow, where it was like, there's this whole handful of unwritten rules and unwritten laws that that people just know. And even though it's not like explicitly stated that you can't do this or that these laws are going to target Black and brown bodies specifically, they do, because that's they were written in a way that made it so. And so, like I say, the Elijah McClain thing kind of just sparked this whole trajectory of ideas and connecting the Jim Crow era to our current state of, you know, law enforcement and how politics work and how the, you know, prison industrial complex works. And so it just all streamlined that way.
Bennett said that the biggest challenge in putting together Colored Black was trying not to censor oneself.
So for me, I'm just like, I don't feel that art should be censored, because I think that, you know, we speak through our art and we give messages and, you know, spark all these conversations. But knowing that, you know, this work is going to be in a white-run gallery, even though it's still by a Black artist, trying to figure out how to honor the message that I'm trying to convey for myself while still trying to be mindful of the trigger points of it. And I think that's been the biggest challenge for me.
Colored Black opens at Pet Shop this Friday, September 4th at 7 p.m. For more information, find Pet Shop Gallery on Facebook. For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirshhorn.
Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Bruce Wallace will be in for Laura Black on Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Portions of Friday Live are pre-recorded. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Carrie Meese, William Padmore, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.
Support for programming comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882. With 43 Central Nebraska locations, cornerstoneconnect.com. Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation. Support for programming also comes from the Mari Sando Society, presenting a virtual lecture and symposium September 16th and 17th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Central. Speakers and panelists will discuss immigration in the American West, details and registration at marisandos.org.